You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to, that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight, we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble and drum. Beat out old trouble on the drum, beat out old trouble on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, beat me that rhythm on the drum, and kick old trouble out the door. Kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the door, kick him out the door.
Welcome to Radical Australian Community Radio 3CR, streaming live on 3cr.org.au. My name is Joseph Toscano. We've got a great guest, but we've even got a greater producer. Henrietta is looking after her chooks. Madison, what are you doing here?
I'm not leaving.
Well, I never asked you to leave.
I'm going to stay here.
Well, Madison, you can stay here till tomorrow morning for all I care.
Yep. No.
Do you have a catheter? Because you may need to go to the toilet.
I'll do it between songs.
We don't have music.
No, I know. So, yeah, it's not much of a show, is it?
Look, I'd like to thank you, Madison, for stepping into the breach. This You're is welcome. What your third hour now behind the
Radical Australia panel. Yes.
Yeah. No, but I mean, you've been on air now for 3 hours. Is that correct?
Yeah. This is three of three. It's not over yet.
Well, that's pretty good. I'm amazed.
Yeah.
I've changed my mind about you. I used to think you're a show pony. Now I know you're a draft horse doing all the work.
I'm a show draft horse.
Now, our guest doesn't know what's going on. Now, are we going to introduce our guest? Now, I'm going to get this wrong. He's going to punch me, but it's all right. I deserve it. Our guest is Rukukui Mastaki.
Not Rukukui.
Yeah, tell me.
But Rukukui Mastaki.
So I got Mastaki right.
Yes.
Even I got that right.
Yeah.
Well, that's an unusual name. The first one. Not the second one. But where were you born?
I was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Now, there's two Congos, aren't there?
No. We have the fat Congo and the small Congo.
Yeah.
I was born from the fat Congo.
And the fat Congo was French colonized by the French?
Well, No, it was not French colony. The small Congo was a French colony, but the big fat Congo was a Belgian colony.
And you can actually, there's a river separating the two capitals, is there?
That's
extraordinary.
The river is called Fleuve Congo. River Congo.
River Congo. What year were you born?
I was born in 1958. Maybe a few years before the Independence Day. That was on the 30th of June, 1960.
Mm.
2 years before
the
Independence, I was born.
I mean, as you said, Belgium, Congo, that was their colonization was quite atrocious, wasn't it, what they did there, the Belgium?
Yeah.
Because you were the actual, the fat Congo was actually the personal property of the Belgian king, wasn't it?
Yeah. The king, Leopold II, was a brutal man. And I don't know how he managed, him who was from the small Belgium could manage to run the big Congo that is the size of maybe the France, Belgium and Germany. So he was very brutal because of the economic interest. That time the Congo was producing rubber, because of the industry of automobile.
Yeah.
They needed rubber for tires, so they had to collect that rubber from Congo. Mm. And from that, many people has been forced to work to complete the quotas of the production of the rubber coming from the trees. So those people who couldn't reach the quota, they were persecuted, they mm-hmm. were killed, they were tortured, even
and their hands cut off.
They like could that. Take captive
yeah.
the women and mm. the children mm. so that the men can work.
Yeah.
Others were cut off their hands.
We're talking about children as young as 10
yeah.
and younger,
yeah.
you know, tapping rubber. This is the beginning of the 20th century. We're not talking about 300 years ago. We're talking about 100 years mm. ago. It was quite a... I remember... There was a famous novel, Conrad was his name, novelist, and he wrote The Heart of Darkness.
Darkness yeah.
And that was his experience about what was happening in the Belgium Congo, because there was no intervention because it was the king's personal property.
Yeah.
Has the Belgium government made any repatriations? Have they passed on money to the Congolese government because of what they did?
Not really.
Not really.
Because when King Leopold Leopold II,
mm.
because of the atrocity that was done to the people,
mm.
and the comrade reported this,
yes.
it was the America who forced this brutal man to leave the power, and mm-hmm. then he handed over the Congo to the government, Belgian government.
The Belgian government.
So the Belgian government was there also to maybe to continue to do the work, but in a different way, even though they couldn't get hands off from the people, but there was another way of beatings, whipping,
mm.
that was continually made people to...
And we're talking about, we're talking about this in the 50s, the 1950s,
yeah, yeah,
before independence.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I understand, if I remember correctly, you had quite a radical leader when independence was declared. What was his name, Mombo?
He was a patriot.
Yes, a patriot, yeah.
His name is Patrice Lumumba.
That's right, yes.
Yeah.
And they say he was assassinated by the US government.
He was assassinated by the Belgian and US government.
He was assassinated. Because yeah. what he wanted to do is he wanted to turn a lot of the land into public assets, not just give it over to the private
Definitely.
Sector. Yeah.
If we could work with the American and the Belgium,
mm.
Not to exploit the mineral for their own benefits,
mm-hmm.
if they could share what they had, maybe the men couldn't be radical
mm.
as such. But because they wanted to take everything for themselves and leave the population poor, this is the thing that he wanted to claim for those governments to try to share the richness of the country with yeah. the population.
Because the Congo, or the Democratic Republic of Congo, is like Australia. It's resource richer than Australia. It's got huge amount of resources, hasn't it?
Yeah, but it is different because sometimes when I arrived to Australia, I was thinking that the Australian government is sharing its... he's a richer country, but
yeah.
he's sharing the richness of the country with the population
mm.
through the system that I can call a communist system of centrelink.
Mm.
So there are people who are not working, they mm. can receive something from the government
mm.
for them to be sustained in a way or another instead of leaving themselves to their own
mm.
Without any support from the government.
Let's get back to... So you would have been 4 when independence was declared. Do you remember anything about that day?
No, I was 2.
You were 2?
I was 2.
So it was
1960. I can't remember anything.
No, no.
Yeah, I can't.
What were your parents' names?
My parents' name is Kangimo Murongo,
mm-hmm.
and my mom, Rosalie Nyamugo.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any brothers and sisters?
Yes. I have brothers and sisters, four brothers, including myself, and six sisters.
Right. So it was a big family.
A big family.
Which wasn't unusual in those days.
No. It was usual.
Usual, that's right. What was life like? Were you in the middle, the eldest, the youngest? What were you?
I'm the oldest boy of the family.
Right.
Yeah.
So what was life like for a young boy during that period?
A young boy, the life, as you know, we are living in a community that is someone has to look after the other one.
Yeah.
It is commune.
It's like
community,
a cooperative.
Cooperation.
Yes.
Not individualist life.
Yeah.
A neighbor is looking after you as a child, as his own child.
Right.
When your mom is not there, the neighbor can take care of you. When you are playing outside, will play with other children. When you are involved in some bullies or in some bad things, a parent of another family will correct you straight away.
Straight away.
He doesn't I don't want to be involved. No. You are for the community and you are looked after by that community.
It reminds me of the old saying, it takes a village to raise a child.
Of course.
Which is something we've forgotten in this country.
we forgot it, yeah.
Yeah, we've forgotten that. So, did you go to school?
Yeah, I went to primary school.
Right.
No, I started first with the kindy, and I went to primary school. I went to secondary school. But during the university level.
Now let's go back to primary and secondary school. Mm. Did you have to pay? Did your parents have to pay? Or was it a
for
public?
For the first time, when I was in primary school, we were not paying anything. It was support. We were supported by the government.
Right.
It was only when the financial situation became a little bit tougher to the government. The government was unable to pay the teachers. This is a time that the parents started paying what we call school fee.
School fees. And while you're a student in primary and secondary college, is anything that you particularly enjoyed learning or doing?
Of course. For us,
yes.
When we were at home, we have to learn the mother tongue. When you are outside of your house, you have to learn another language. You have to communicate in Swahili. When you are out of your community, you are at school, you have to learn French. So this we enjoyed to learn new languages when you were young, and especially if you could speak French at the primary school, you were seen like someone who is progressing in his studies or his knowledge.
So French was it continues to be the national language, French?
No, French is not an official language. Right. But we have national languages.
Yes.
There are four. But French is the bureaucratic language, the language that is used for the schools.
Right.
The language is used at university, but outside of French, we have four national languages. We have Swahili, we have Lingala, we have Kikongo, and Chiluba. So, to be able to communicate, you have to learn French. Otherwise, two of the four languages, national languages.
Right. So, you went to university?
Not in my country, but I went to university overseas.
When you went to university overseas, were you forced out of the country or you got a scholarship to go to a university overseas?
I got a private scholarship. Then I went to I went to Bible College in East Africa, in Kenya. Yes, I got a scholarship, 3-year scholarship.
So for the Bible College. Were you learning to be a minister or was it more learning about the Bible itself?
It is both, learning about the Bible. And when we were at school, the the principal of the school noticed that I have some teaching gifts. So I was a teacher, a Bible school teacher.
At the university, well, you're a student.
Yes.
You're a student and a teacher.
Yeah.
I hope they paid you something.
No. I was just right. after school. Yes. This is the time that yes. the principal mm-hmm. gave a note to people who could employ us.
Yes.
This one has right. pastor's gift.
Yes.
And the other one, we were two.
Yes.
The other one has a teacher gifts. So because of that, when we finished, my friend was employed as to start a new church, but for me, I was taken to go and teach in a Bible school.
Right. And when you talk about a new church, was it a particular Christian denomination you
yes,
were part of?
Yes, it was a Baptist church.
Baptist church, mm. right. So you'd have good relationships with Northern Europe.
Yes, right. yes, definitely.
Right.
Even before that, because Congo being a Belgian colony, mm. we had many missionaries coming from overseas
yep.
to implant churches yes. in different area of the country.
And in is the Baptist church?
No, that time.
Right.
Our area, because during the colony, missionaries who were coming were directed in part of the Congo so that they don't mix with others who are already there.
Right.
They have to get their own like mission field
mm-hmm.
where they can preach and start their own churches. So in our area, because they came from the area that is called Uvira in South Kivu province, our area was given to missionaries coming from Sweden.
Right.
So it was a Swedish Free Mission that started the churches in our area.
Right, so how come you found yourself in a Baptist college?
I went to Baptist college because this is an opportunity that has been given to have a scholarship.
Yep.
I didn't get a scholarship from the Swedish Free Mission.
Right.
That was a Pentecostal church. But through different means,
mm-hmm.
I came to capture that scholarship.
Ship, right.
And
I
found myself doing my studies at a Bible college.
Right.
Baptist Bible College.
So did you return from, was it Kenya you settled, Tanzania?
I was in Kenya. Yeah. I returned to the Congo.
Yes.
It is in the Congo that I became now the teacher of Bible school.
Right. And how? And what year was that when you returned to the Congo?
I went to Kenya in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
I was back in Congo in 1989. In 1990, I went now to teach in a Bible college sponsored by the American missionaries.
Right. Now, getting back, so those 3 years you spent in Kenya, was there much change when you came back to the Congo?
Yeah, 3 years, because all of those 3 years, I didn't get the opportunity to go back.
Yep.
But there was changes definitely coming to the when coming back from Kenya,
mm-hmm.
like there were many transformation made by the government to maybe to build new roads, to electrify the some areas of the country, and that place where we were living, of our town, of course. New people who got new employments through the works that has been done of changing this and that.
Right. Mm. So the government was still stable at that stage?
Yeah, the government was stable, but you could feel like there is something that is missing.
Right.
Because the crisis was deepening a little bit comparing to the years that we had to know how we were enjoying what the government was doing to the teachers, because as a primary school teacher also,
yes.
because before going to the college, I was a primary school teacher.
Right.
I had a diploma of teaching. So the government was not still, when I came back from Kenya, not able to pay for the teachers.
Right. And why do you think that happened? It's a resource-rich country. Why do you think that happened?
Bad governments.
Corruption or bad government?
Bad governance.
Governance.
Yeah. Corruption.
Right. So
people wanting to fill up their own pockets, and the money that is coming through are not dispatched to the ministry and do the job. Right. Everyone is putting in. Corruption.
So you went back to teach at a Bible school.
Yeah.
Where was that?
It was in the interior part of the Congo, because to reach there, I can't go there by road. I have to fly by a small plane run by the Missionary Aviation Fellowship, MAF. These are the small planes run by some responsible missionaries, doctors who are holding some hospitals running in the interior part of the country, and they are also responsible for school. So those missionaries, they organize themselves through the Missionary Aviation Fellowship to transport the workers or the missionaries themselves who are coming from overseas from the area where they have to go to for their mission.
Were you surprised when you arrived? What was the conditions like?
Because it was in the interior of the country, there is not much that we could expect there, even though we had to work with American missionaries who have already implanted something from themselves, etc. But it was still in a remote area where I was working to teach those students who volunteers with their family to come to the mission to get educated also in pastoral ministry.
Would you have many students in your class?
Yeah, we had many.
Many?
Many students.
And how about facilities?
The facilities were according to the area where we're living. Yeah.
So how long did you last in that job?
From 90 to 92.
3 years.
Yeah, 3 years. And then we had to evacuate from there because there was a strike, a military strike.
What do you mean a military strike?
The military couldn't be paid.
Right.
They went to...
to get paid.
To by get robbing paid the, by robbing...
the population.
By robbing shops.
Yes.
Etc. Yeah.
Right.
So missionaries were taken straight away out from where we were by helicopter.
Right.
And when they were in the capital, they hired another small plane from Missionary Aviation Fellowship to take me out from there to a place where I could take a big plane to go back where I came from.
Right. So did you feel under threat?
As a Congolese, no.
No. Because,
but because I was far away from home.
Yes.
Yeah, and the missionaries have already left.
Yes.
Can you imagine what will be the life there?
Exactly.
Because sometimes we may be in need in this and that.
Yes.
But if those people who are stealing stuff will come to the mission to try to steal stuff from missionaries, it will be very bad. Yeah. But I was taken not long before things get worse.
Yes,
evacuated to my own province.
What's your province again?
I was in Kasai Occidental province. Then I was to be evacuated to go back in South Kivu province, Sud Kivu province, where I came from.
Mm-hmm. So is Christianity important to people in the Congo?
Yeah, very important.
Very important.
Very important. Yeah.
Right. So there are many denominations.
Many denominations.
Right.
And recently, with what we call Église de Réveil, churches of awakening. We have a lot of churches. Sometimes they are not well administered. They are not well controlled. Anyone with his family and his wife.
Can become a minister, yes.
Can become a minister and start a church, yes, in his own home.
Yes, yes. So when you went back to your province, what did you do then?
I assisted the friend there to who was left as a minister. I helped him in the teaching, mm-hmm, as a teacher. Also, I went back to there is a big sugar factory in our area, mm-hmm, that has primary school and secondary school. I was employed there as a primary school teacher,
right,
in the Kiliba Sugar Cane Company.
Was that company owned by foreign interests or Congolese?
Belgium.
Yeah. Still owned by the Belgian.
Yeah.
Right. And what was it like teaching there?
It was good. It was good.
Mm.
And the student, because the sugar company was paying a little bit different from what the government is paying. But at the end also, the company came to collapse through the rebellion that came, et cetera.
That's interesting. Rebellion.
Rebellion, yeah.
When did that happen?
It happened things started to collapse when there was a genocide in Rwanda.
Right.
Those people were in Rwanda who fled from Rwanda to the Congo.
Right.
The Congo was overflooded with refugees. And since that time,
mm-hmm,
The political situation of the country became a little bit tense,
mm-hmm,
because we can hear like murmuring voices of war coming. Wow. And then, this is a time that things didn't.
So this is what, the late 1990s,
yeah,
when
yeah,
the Rwanda
yeah.
genocide occurred.
Mm, mm, mm.
And you had, what were the two groups, the Hutu and who were the other group?
The Hutu and Tutsi.
Tutsi. Yeah. And you would have had mainly Hutu refugees, wouldn't you, when it collapsed?
Sorry?
Mainly Hutu refugees once...
The one who fled from Rwanda to the Congo, yes.
Yeah, because I remember seeing the pictures and just horrendous.
Yeah, it was.
But that's only one corner of this big country. How come it was so destabilizing?
What can I say? Everything was linked with politics.
Mm-hmm.
The one who was the president of the Congo at that time was Mobutu Sese Seko.
Right.
Because he was no more needed by the power that put him there to be president, because the Cold War was finished.
Yep.
They didn't need him anymore.
Right.
So those refugees who fled from Rwanda were like cornered to fled from Congo, because they had an agenda. When they are fleeing from Congo, they will be chased from Congo,
mm-hmm,
to kick out the man that they wanted to be out of power.
Right. So what powers are you talking about?
Okay. The West supported Paul Kagame from Uganda,
mm-hmm,
to carry the genocide in Rwanda, even though we can say that the Hutu killed Tutsi, but it is not only the Hutu that killed Tutsi, also the Tutsi killed the Hutus.
Yes.
They killed them in Rwanda.
Yep.
They killed them in Congo. Everyone killed everyone.
Hmm. I find this a little bit difficult because they're all Christians.
Yeah.
The Hutus are Christian, the Tutsi are Christian, the Congolese are Christians.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, over 100 years of Christian missionaries. Why do you think things collapsed to such an extent?
To say that they were Christians,
mm-hmm,
is quote-unquote Christians.
Right.
But it will depend the agenda that is behind every war that started somewhere.
Yep.
We don't have guns. We don't fabricate guns. We don't sell guns. But you will find that this group is fighting this group. The one who is responsible for that war or that rebellion or that insecurity is selling guns to this group. They're selling guns to this group to fight.
Yes.
When they are fighting, they are taking what they want to take. Mm-hmm. When you are fighting for the bones.
Yes.
Like two dogs fighting for one bones. But those who want, who triggered that war,
yep,
they are doing something else. Like taking the minerals that they want to take from the area is in trouble.
Yes, because this area is exceptionally rich, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's why we said they are all Christian.
Mm.
Because the Christianity came from where it came to the Congo. Yeah. And those who came with the Christianity are the one who is selling guns to those Christians to fight.
To fight, right, yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened to you? How long did you last in that? When you say things were unstable, how were they unstable for you?
Okay, things were unstable. When I said the refugees from Rwanda fled to the Congo, then it was in 1994.
That's right.
So the Rwandese soldiers entered in the Congo in 1996, saying that they were fighting the Hutus who killed people in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. They are hunting them in the Congo.
Yep.
They destroyed all the refugee camp of Hutus, saying that they were preparing themselves to go and overthrow again the power that was in Rwanda.
Yep.
Of course, after the killing of two presidents, the President Habyarimana from Rwanda and the President Cyprien Ntaryamira of Burundi.
Burundi, yeah.
They were in the same plane coming from the treaty of power sharing from Arusha, Tanzania.
Yes.
But they didn't like to finish the job that they wanted. They wanted to sign maybe peace agreement to share the power, Hutu and Tutsi. But because of those agendas behind, they said, no, we can't wait to sign this peace agreement and that peace agreement to continue to rule the Rwanda. Otherwise, Tutsi were feeling that they are minorities, Hutu are majority. Even through the election, they can't win because they are minority.
Yes.
Hutus will still win. So it was to fight, to overthrow the government, to take the power.
Right. Mm. Yes, people forget about that plane crash, which was instrumental in things starting.
Mm.
So now, just, can you clarify something for our listeners? Now, a lot of people think Hutus and the other group, they are...
Tutsi.
Yeah, Hutus and Tutsis, they're different tribes. They're not, are they? They're the same people in many regards. It's, I heard that it was the colonial authorities who kind of had created a class of people to rule on their behalf,
mm-hmm.
and these were the Tutsi, and the Hutu were mainly farmers, subsistence farmers. Is that correct? Or?
Yeah. Normally, Tutsi are pastors.
Yeah.
They have cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But even though you have cattle, you need farmers around.
Yes.
Because you need to get things that those farmers are producing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't only drink milk and stay alive.
That's right.
They need those farmers that can cultivate other products to share and to live together. But because of that distinction, of course, between those two ethnic group, the Hutu and the Tutsi, classified by the Belgian, it was maybe to put them as such, to rule them properly.
Mm. Eh? Divide and rule.
So, yeah, this is what happened to those two ethnic groups.
Now, I haven't asked you this. Were you married by this time and had children?
When the war started, I was married already. I had two kids.
So there was you, your wife, and two kids that you had to look after.
Yeah.
And you weren't getting paid any wages.
Well, no, that time I was working at the sugar company as a teacher there in the school. We were paid even though it was small. Comparing to previous time when I was a teacher, it was a primary school teacher from the government. The government couldn't pay. The parents were the one who were paying the teachers through their school fee.
So when the sugar refinery collapsed, what happened to you and your family?
This is a time that I said we start having the rumors of the war. Anyone could say that I have to keep some money. If the war comes, I will flee. I will leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is a time that, of course, the Rwandese troops invaded the Congo. And everyone took his own way and such where to go.
And what happened to you and your family?
For us, we fled from the north to the south. But in the middle of that chaotic situation, the troops that invaded Congo catch us quickly, mm-hmm. and we were told that because you are civilian, you just come back and go and stay in your place. We don't have problem with you. We have problem with militaries or soldiers and politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Then we were like taken hostage and returned back to our places.
And how old were your children then?
My children were around 4 and 2.
So it would have had a big impact on them.
Yeah.
Big impact. Yeah. So you went back north, and what happened after that?
We were now under rebel control because the part of the country was run by the government,
mm-hmm.
another part run by the rebels.
Which rebels?
Rebels called AFDEL, Alliance des Front Démocratique de la Libération du Congo.
Were they any different to the government?
Yeah, it was different. Those rebels were backed by Rwanda, Uganda, and Burundi to fight the government of Mobutu Sese Seko.
And so what happened to you eventually, you and your family?
We stayed there under rebel control.
For how long?
For 2 years.
Were you frightened?
Sorry?
Were you worried about your safety?
Of course.
That's what I'm asking.
We were under rebel control.
Yeah. They could have come in at any time.
And we were under rebel control. So we stayed there under rebel control.
Mm.
And on the other side, so they did 7 months and they conquered all the republic.
The whole republic?
All republic. Then the president Mobutu fled and they put a new president. The one who proclaimed himself as president was Laurent Kabila. He became president. But 2 years later, he said, okay, I have already got the power. You Rwandese soldiers who helped me to catch or to take over, you can return back to your country.
Mm-hmm.
I want Congolese only soldiers to be with me. They went back to their own country, but because of that, they were not happy for Kabila to tell them to leave.
Mm-hmm.
They came back 2 years later with another rebellion, fighting the men they put on power, Kabila.
Right. Mm. And you were caught up in all this?
We were caught up. This was the second war of the Congo. The one was in 1996. The second war was 1998. So it was like another rebellion movement. The first one took the power. The second one was RCD, Rassemblement Congolais pour la Démocratie.
It's an interesting thing.
Congolese rally for democracy.
Isn't it interesting? They always use the word democratic when they're not. It's like it's not. It's like the North Korean People's Democratic Republic.
They fought again. Yes. This time we didn't run.
Right.
We stayed in our houses. It was like a wave that went it passed, and they took maybe one third of the country.
Yep.
They conquered one third of the country.
Yeah.
Now the one that they put on power was assassinated.
Right.
His son, quote unquote son, took power, and they did some negotiation.
Mm.
They put all those militia and rebels, because we have some people that we call Mai Mai, the rebel group that believes in charms. Means that if you have those charms, they can fire you a bullet.
Yes.
You won't die.
That's
it
right.
It will be my means water.
Yes.
It will be like water. Yeah. So they mixed all those rebels together and those my together to make a coalition government.
Right.
So Joseph Kabila is the one who was in power when Roland Kabila died.
Right. Mm. So what happened to your little family?
We stayed again there.
Mm.
And it was exactly when the second rebellion started, that in 2000, that started in 1998, that made me in 2001 to leave the country. I fled from Congo to Burundi. I wanted to go back to Congo a little bit, but because it wasn't safe. I left Burundi, I couldn't go back to Burundi. I fled straight away to Tanzania.
Right.
I stayed there.
Now, was your family with you then?
No.
Or they remained behind?
Yeah, because at that time it was men who were in trouble.
Right.
Women, kids, it is okay.
Okay.
But I left when the second rebellion was running. The land, and then after a few months, my wife and kids joined me in the refugee camp.
In Tanzania.
Yes.
How hard was it to get from Burundi to Tanzania? Did you have to? Was it relatively? Did you have to walk?
No, I went back to the Congo, but I didn't stay longer in the Congo.
Right.
So I had to go to the. You have like a small, how do we call it? It is like a small beach.
Yes.
Close to, because we are.
Yes.
With the Lake Tanganyika.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the beach, said, okay, we will not say that I'm fleeing to go to the refugee camp. So, okay, I'm going to another city.
Right.
On the border of the lake somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But when you are in the middle,
Did
crossover.
Was there issues regarding papers, passports, or that weren't needed?
Yeah, when you are boarding, you have to have the IDs before boarding. Those rebels were running, they were in control of everything.
Mm.
Okay, they will ask, where are you going?
Yeah.
I'm going to the other side, but you are going to the other.
Right. So how long was you and your family in the refugee camp?
We were the lucky ones, because for me, I did there 2 years.
My
wife did there maybe 1 year and a half, and we got the resettlement to Australia.
How did that happen? Did you make an application? Or?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's what I would like to know. Tell us the process.
You have to make an application.
Yes.
And say why you wanted to leave. You don't want to go back to your country.
Mm-hmm.
How? So, we have to say, why did you leave? Why did you flee from where you are?
Mm-hmm.
What is the problem where you are? And why do you need to be resettled in a third country?
So you, the family come together, or did you come first and then your family second?
No, that time when I was there for the first time, maybe after six months, my wife and kids joined me. And then we did the process together of applying. I was lucky because some of the process of application, I wrote them in English.
Right.
Because in Kenya, when I was in Kenya, the Bible school was part English and Swahili. But I did the application in English. I sent those application in Geneva, et cetera, et cetera. And then, yes.
So did you know you were coming to Australia?
Or no. Coming to Australia, you don't have a choice. Because when you're applying,
yes,
it will depend of those who are assessing your application meet the criteria of which country.
Right.
For the first time, I was told, okay, you may be taken in Canada. When I went back home, I started opening some of the books of geography because I was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the refugee camp, I was also a teacher there, primary school teacher. Yeah. I started opening books of geography to see how life of Canada looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So I started reading that book, but for the second interview, they said, no, you are not going to Canada.
Yeah.
Your requirements, you fulfill the requirement to go to Australia.
Did you know anything about Australia?
No. But when I was told again that you go to Australia, this is a time that I went to read.
Yes.
The funny thing that I found, I said, okay, in Australia, we have a lot of more sheep than people.
More sheep than people. That's an old one. That's New Zealand. New Zealand has more sheep than people, not Australia.
More sheep than people.
That's a New Zealand joke.
New Zealand.
Yeah, okay. They got more sheep than people. So what year did you arrive in Australia?
It was in November 2003.
What did your children think of the plane flight? They wouldn't have been on a plane before, would they?
No, it was the first time.
Yeah.
But because we took how many? Three planes
three
to come
planes
to Australia.
Yeah.
No, four. From the refugee camp, we flew from Kigoma to Tabora.
Mm-hmm.
From Tabora to Dar es Salaam. And then we changed the plane from Dar es Salaam to South Africa, Johannesburg.
Right.
And then from Johannesburg, we flew from Johannesburg to Sydney. From Sydney to Adelaide.
To Adelaide.
Yes.
So you originally arrived in Adelaide.
Yes.
And what did you think of that when you walked out of the airport? Was there anybody to meet you?
Yeah. We, first of all, in Tanzania, we had the what we call OIM, International Office of Migration, things like that. We had some agents there to lead us where to go, what to do, etc. And when we were in Sydney, some people directed us that you are not staying here, you will go fly, you will be flying again to another province.
Right.
Then when we arrived in Adelaide, we had a case manager with two volunteers, one who speaks Swahili, another one who speaks French. They were there to welcome us.
So how long did you and your family stay in Adelaide for?
We stayed there for 14 years.
14 years?
Yeah, before moving to Melbourne.
Right. Now, did you do any further studies while you were in Adelaide?
Yes. In Adelaide, I went back to English course. I did Certificate 4, advanced in English. And then I did a course of interpreting. Then I did a course of Certificate 4 in Community Services, then a Diploma in Community Services.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I went to Pacific Bible Institute in Queensland to do, it was like a master degree course, but it ended up to be a graduate course.
Right.
So I did 3 years of graduate course in Pacific Baptist Bible Institute in Queensland.
Right. So why did you and your family decide to come to Melbourne?
It was during my long service leave where I was working at the Australian Migrant Resource Centre.
Right. This is in Adelaide.
In Adelaide.
Mm-hmm.
So during that long service leave, I said, okay, my wife, we have some friends that we left in Tanzania refugee camp, mm-hmm. that are now living in Melbourne. This is an opportunity to go and visit because the long service leave was for 3 months.
Yep.
After working there for 10 years.
Yep.
Then we visited the friend here in Melbourne. My wife said, okay, I don't want to go back to Adelaide.
Smart woman.
I don't want to go
back
to
Adelaide. A lot of people who are 3CR don't want to go
why
back.
Why you don't want to go back to bed? Oh, no, I like here, see here.
Yeah.
So I said, okay.
Okay.
Now.
How about the kids? Were they grown up? Were they still with you?
Yes, they were grown up, but still they're under dad's and mum's rules.
This is when they came to Melbourne. What did they think of Melbourne?
When they arrived in Melbourne, there was a difference. This is the time that school was using much laptops.
Yep.
That time. So it was well done here in Melbourne and Adelaide. The kids enjoyed having the iPad at home, working on the things that they have to work on from home.
Right.
So this is the thing that they enjoyed much when they arrived here in Melbourne. In terms of schooling.
That's a big move after 10 years. You had a steady job, you had long service leave.
Yeah, after 14 years, yes. Yeah,
that's a big move. Well, at least you listened to your wife. I think you made the right decision. Now, is there a Congolese community in Melbourne?
Yeah, big one.
Tell us about it.
The Congolese community is big. And we have a lot of people coming from different areas of the Congo that are here. And many of the people who were living in Adelaide with us, many families, they moved from Adelaide to Melbourne too.
Yeah.
So we have three communities of Congolese.
Three communities.
Yes.
Why three communities?
Because we have people who may not agree with this leadership.
Oh, it's like any group.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a Jewish or Muslim or Christian. That's people who are atheists. They never agree. Yeah. There's always so. You've got three community groups in Melbourne.
Yeah, we have.
Which one are you involved with?
I'm involved with two.
Two. Mm. Oh, I haven't blackballed you.
The Victorian Congolese community.
Yes.
And the Congolese diaspora. Yes.
So one's what? What's the difference? Just leaderships? Or?
The difference is the Congolese diaspora is the one that we started recently.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, if there are three Congolese community, but you can have one Congolese diaspora.
Mm.
It may include everyone.
Smart move. So now I know there's Congolese communities in Shepparton. Are there other places that you know of in Victoria where there are Congolese communities?
Yeah, we have. It can be the extension of what is here.
Yes,
it is in Shepparton. Another one recently is in Wodonga.
Wodonga,
yes.
Right.
And we had something like
Don't worry. Mm. But Shepparton and Wodonga in Melbourne are the three big thing. And what people in Shepparton and Wodonga basically what working in the meatworks and agriculture or
normally in factories.
Factories, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So they're providing a very useful service.
Mm.
So when did you first make contact with the West Papuan Independence Movement, the West Papuan office?
Okay, I met for the first time with Papa Clovis Mwamba.
Yes.
And he one day told me that I'm involved in different things here. So if you are ready, we can go and attend one of the functions run by the Wasp Poor in the city. Mm-hmm. So I said, okay, I'm ready, because I stopped working mm-hmm. since 2017 when we moved to Melbourne. Mm-hmm. So I was free to do things. I was free to move around because I was like new. Mm-hmm. So Papa Clovis Mwamba is the one who introduced me to the West Papua group.
I have seen you there once, I think. I've seen you there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you came for the free lunch.
I've seen you three times.
That's right. Mm. For the lunch.
And I have a lot of photos of you doing the auctions.
The auction. Look, just in case our listeners are interested, this Sunday is a West Papuan Community Open Day at the West Papuan office, starting at 1 p.m. Mm-hmm. And lunch between 1 and 2. And then there'll be some West Papuan speakers speaking about the situation in West Papua today. Then there's the auction to try to raise some more money to keep the office afloat. And if you're interested, it's at 838 Collins Street. Get off the tram, walk around the back. That's where the meeting room and lunch area is. Everybody is welcome. You don't have to pay anything. Hopefully you'll buy something at the auction, and maybe you'll even join the West Papuan Rent Collective. You never know. So come along and meet. Now, you'll be there, will you?
Will it be the same place that we usually meet?
Yes, same place, same place.
Same place, okay.
So, will you be there?
I will be there.
You'll be there?
I will be there.
Good. So if you want to meet this man and talk to him about the convoluted story of politics and genocide in the Congo, the big Congo, not the little Congo.
The fat Congo.
The fat Congo. Come along to the West Papuan do. Now, look, I'd like to congratulate you and your family for being part of this community. Mm-hmm. It's always good to see how people integrate into the community.
Yeah.
And I noticed that you're wearing an Australian cap on your head. Is that correct?
Yes.
So that means you're a citizen.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. You've become a citizen.
I'm a citizen. Yeah. Australian citizen. Because the funny thing is, for our country, if you have another, you get another citizenship, you will lose the original one.
Well, you didn't care about that, did you?
I care about it. Because if I go back to the Congo, I'm foreign.
Well, that's all right.
I'll be a foreigner in my own country. But anyway, they know me. They're just reading my name, they say, he's one of us.
So just one last question. Are you affiliated with any church here in Melbourne?
Yes.
Which one?
Attending at West Side Baptist Church in Deer Park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us.
Thank you.
As I said, the program is a podcast. And embarrass me again and tell us how to correctly pronounce your name.
Can you try?
All right, I'll try.
Try?
I'll try. I'll try. He wants to embarrass me, Madison. That's why he wants me to try.
The last embarrassment that we can get for this year.
Let's see how you go.
Ruku kuku.
No.
Mastaki.
No.
I got Mastaki.
Rukukuye Mastaki.
Rukukuye Mastaki.
Rukukuye.
Rukukuye. Kuye Mastaki.
Okay.
Oh, that's it. I've failed. I have failed. Thank you, Madison, for once again being part of my embarrassment.
Thank you, Dr. Toscano.
Now, this program is podcast. It should be podcast the next few days. There'll be a picture. But come along this Sunday and meet this man. He's got a great story to tell, and he's a great human being.
Definitely, I'll meet you.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.